Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
On this episode of Learn More, we're looking at theatre, singing, dance, circus. What can the arts teach children? And what benefit does this have to confidence and communication, structure and exploration of their own bodies and boundaries? On the show, we'll be talking to Christina Conti, who is an expert teacher and PhD student herself for the expressive arts, who'll explain how to talk to kids about the art that they make and the focus on the process that makes art such a benefit. Jane Davis will also join us on the show. She's a circus director and trainer. She'll talk to us about risk and celebrating, as she calls it, the overall rat baggery and diversity that is inherent in circus. And Marquise McGee, musician, music teacher, Foley artist and sound innovator, talks to us about the benefits of music and creativity with sound. Thanks to the International Institute of Lancy for sponsoring the show this morning. Let's find out about the arts in education.
Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
Christina Conti is an expressive arts facilitator and therapist working with children, teens and families for the past 10 years. She's an art and theatre teacher and she's a student herself. She's currently working on her PhD in expressive arts at the European Graduate School in Saas-Fee here in Switzerland. She's an actor and an artist herself, as well as a director, and she's a mum of a creative teenager. Christina, can you give us a brief overview of what you'd consider the overall benefits of art in education?
Well, listen, there are quite a few things to talk about when we're talking about the big word A-R-T, but I would say that in general, people rely on art to communicate, to express themselves, and actually to heal. Art is something that allows people to explore emotions. You know, you develop self-awareness and more recently and more, you know, pertinent to our situation is to cope with stress. Social skills are boosted, self-esteem is boosted, and it's all good.
What are we actually talking about when we talk about art?
For me, I talk about the arts, if that makes sense, in terms of the global concept of any sort of expressive element, whether it be theater, improv, art that is visual and three-dimensional or two-dimensional. You can talk about poetry. You can talk about movement. And movement, I would say, especially with children, is super important, really key for their development.
You're doing your PhD in expressive arts. I'm curious to learn a little bit more about that. But the WHO as well is launching reports about the importance of art.
This is true. They've launched their first report on the evidence base for arts and health interventions, which was in 2019. And I feel kind of like a sigh of relief. Ah, finally, they've got this evidence, because you know how people like real evidence. And they've found that arts do contribute to promoting and preventing what goes on when we're trying to treat and manage our health conditions.
It's kind of ironic that we need the science behind the arts.
I know, but it does help. It helps people get their heads around it, really.
So how do we encourage kids to do art? Imagine that I'm a parent, I'm listening to this, I want to encourage my kids to do art to get some of these benefits. What kind of things can I be doing to make sure that they feel supported in their artistic endeavors?
Well, I'll tell you, one thing that I think is key comes from a little anecdote from my childhood is when I came from a very artistic family, but I would say the tendency and the instinct to say, oh, that's pretty, what is it? Is something that although sounds lovely, you know, as a parent, you think, oh, I'm encouraging my child, when actually you're not. What you want to do is talk about maybe the process and not necessarily the end result. You don't ask, oh, is that a flower? Or give a judgment and say it's a pretty flower. Even a positive judgment takes you down a different path. So what you want to do is you want to just say something that encourages that discussion about the process. And that's really helpful, I think, for kids to not be judged in their creation or in their creative endeavors.
I think one argument that I've heard that is discouraging kids in the arts somewhat is that it is not really a guaranteed career. There are so few who make it in acting, for example, and people who love kids that want to become actors would say, I just don't want to see my loved ones struggle. And the same with artists. I mean, it's very difficult to say, I want to make it as an artist. There is really no clear career path for that.
I hear you. I hear you, Kat. But, and that may have been the case, I think, many years ago. I feel that today what's happening is that these career paths that you mentioned may or may not even have been invented. Let's consider that our youth are doing jobs that didn't exist just a few moments ago. And I think that we need to open up to the idea that the cross mixing of careers, if you will, and how creativity affects each and every element of what's out there is super important.
With that in mind, I mean, the benefits of incorporating art into education, it's not just really restricted to making it, though, is it? The end result, the career in adulthood. What can you actually get from the process?
Oh, my goodness. It really is important to favor the process over the product, Kat. I'm glad you brought that up, because when you are really just focusing on the end result, you've got a reaction from the child to please you, whether that be the teacher or the parent or even another peer. So what you want to do is allow that exploration toward different outcomes rather than an expectation that's been preconceived. So they need that chance to make their own decisions in their artwork, make their choices. They want to have a space to make the mistake making, the risk taking, all that experimentation that occurs when you're not expected to come up with something at the end that meets criteria, if you will, gives space and help kids gain control of their decision making. Very oftentimes their emotions when words aren't enough, the art kind of steps in. Give an example of playing around like with improv and different creative things. It encourages that risk-taking because you're not really doing whatever it is you're acting out. So it becomes a safe environment to build skills. And honestly, this is something that we can't have enough of.
Tell me a little bit about the arts in times of COVID.
Oh, goodness. It's really interesting because I think that the idea in the therapeutic uses of making art is maybe something that wasn't discussed so often. And now we're all looking at ways to cope, quite frankly. And when I say we are all looking because the current pandemic is really considered a collective trauma. And we all need to find new ways to get that personal insight, develop coping skills, and work toward the eventual healing of this situation. So anything creative or using the creative process is going to help people explore that.
Personally, do you think that there is any artistic skill, artistic expression that comes with more benefits than another? For example, is painting better than sculpture? Is drama better than singing, etc.?
Well, listen, one of the beautiful things is the choice, and it really does depend on the individual. The question you would ask is, certainly with kids, you know, if you ask, do you like art, to some children, they'll say, nope, I don't want to do it. So we go back to, you know, full circle to say, how do we get them to do it? And we get them through other things that they're interested in. If they like Lego and they're very 3D, well, you know, there's your clue for sculpture. If they see the world in colors and et cetera, then you want to encourage some sort of exploration, perhaps in painting. And if they're really into movement and can't sit still, this is a kid who needs to be on stage, so to speak, and moving around and trying different things out in the world of make-believe, for example.
Can you give us a little bit of info about your PhD?
Yes, I'm really excited. This is a low residency program at the European Graduate School in SASFE. For the first time, we're online. We're doing lots of Zooming, as everyone else is. And my focus, I want to create a third culture kids club in Geneva. And the idea came to me while thinking about La Jonction, which, as you know, is the confluence of two rivers here in town that form a third. And much like what we're experiencing as our Geneva youth blends their backgrounds to form an identity that is particular and special to our city. As an international place, as the place of future global citizens of the world, we want to look at how that particular entity comes into forming their personalities and their choices and their beings during these really important formative years. So I'm excited.
That is a nice metaphor. Well, best of luck with it, Christina.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for talking to us all about the expressive arts.
My pleasure, Kat. Thank you.
Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
For those that know me know that I love the arts. And you know what? This is a very personal topic for me because, well, I studied arts in education and I think it is really important. And so it was really important to me to show all of the different ways that arts can be such an incredible benefit. And we're looking today for Learn More for this show, which is brought to you by the International Institut de Lancy. Today, we're looking at all of the different ways that arts can be so crucial. Now, I thought this was a great opportunity to get in touch with people that, well, I have worked with in the past, in fact. And one of those was Jane Davis. Now, Jane is an incredible circus director and circus trainer. And 10 years ago, she was my boss for a very short time when I was backpacking through Australia. And I put down my backpack just long enough to work for her for a short while, for a few months in Wollongong, Australia. I thought I'd get in touch with Jane to find out a little bit more about circus, why she really truly believes that it can bring such a lot to kids. And I started off by asking her about a particular project that she was involved in when she first came to the circus where I worked with her, which was a circus called Circus Monoxide. Here's Jane.
I worked for this fantastic contemporary circus company called Circus Monoxide, and I came to the company after they had finished touring, and so we were based in Wollongong. And as I was kind of teaching through the community, I realised that kind of spread throughout the Australian countryside were these pockets of regional and often quite isolated circus communities where the circus community had literally sprung up because Monoxide, who used to tour with these fantastically unreliable double-decker buses and trucks and various vehicles, which were dodgy as anything, so quite frequently these vehicles would break down in the town and the circus company would stay in town until the vehicles were able to move again. And while they were there, they taught circus classes and worked with the local arts community just to kind of get a feed and to use their time while they were trying to fix the vehicles. And by the time I was working with the company, a lot of those kind of broken down stops had been 10 years ago, and I was teaching workshops in the towns where the history and the heritage left behind by Monoxide broken down vehicles meant that there was still a thriving little community-based circus in these towns.
What do you think that brought the communities, though, apart from having acrobats and jugglers?
A circus is really special in that we celebrate a lot of things that mainstream education, but also even a lot of art organisations don't celebrate. So particularly in that traditional sense, there was a quite strong, not only tolerance, but appreciation and celebration of ratbaggery. You don't have to be able to conform in as strict a way as you do for other sports and art forms. So for example, to be a tumbler in the circus, if you're not flexible, you can get around it. You can tumble in different ways. And the differences that you have in your physicality is actually what is celebrated on stage rather than the conformity in the, strictly speaking, high school level in a competitive sense. And I think that culture of celebrating difference, embracing diversity, flows through all of circus, that there's no one outcome that we're looking for, I guess.
If you look at, for example, and I'm just going to take something as simple as we're building a human pyramid, just give us an idea of what you think that kids are learning between them or what they're doing that's not just building that pyramid.
The first thing that is really obvious is that you are trusting each other in a way that is real and cannot be faked or replicated in another situation. the person on the bottom is holding up the people on the top. And if anybody in that pyramid makes a mistake or stuffs around or doesn't listen, everybody gets hurt. And obviously, a good teacher, you're not going to let children get seriously hurt, but they will get a pokey elbow in the back and those sorts of things. So that sense of trust between the kids, particularly with that partner acrobatic and partner aerial work, and the realness of that situation is often quite profound. Often I find that kids have not been allowed to do things that are very hard and very challenging in this very risk-averse world in which we live. The kids learnt to manage risk.
Jane really encouraged me to think about where else kids might learn such skills to make decisions based on risk factor and to understand dangers and make their situations safer. There's just one more thing, though, that she needs to add that makes circus a great art.
Not all circuses, depending on their flavour, but a lot of circus celebrates the ridiculous and the stupid. And kids love stupid. They love the stupid and the ridiculous. And I think being able to be stupid and ridiculous and make fart jokes and have people think that's great, there's a joy in that simplicity, and I think that's wonderful.
Jane celebrates chaos. She's a circus director and trainer and mum of four, but I love her input on circus as an art and the particular benefits that this art can offer for our Learn More Arts in Education special.
Learn More, sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy, an education for life. At IIL.
Marquis McGee is a musician, a music teacher, and a sound artist. He plays many different instruments and creates musical scores and soundscapes for film, animation, video games, documentaries. He's currently working on a project soon to be coming to our screens via RTS. He also experiments with sound in interesting and innovative ways, such as through his Sound Sips project, where music is transmitted through vibrations in metal drinking straws. And one of his most recent projects is as a Foley artist with the Basel Opera, where instead of being hidden away in a booth activating the sound effects, he's in plain view on stage during the opera so the audience can watch live sound effects being created by often unlikely objects and actions. It's because of all this combined, I'd describe him as a musician and a sound innovator. Marquis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Kat.
Now, your life, Marquis, is all about sound. So my first question to you is sound different to music? Is music different to sound?
Yes. So this is actually the very first question that I go over with students that I have for music creation. I do a music creation club and I also teach private lessons. And I ask them, what makes music different from sound? And usually I get a few answers, but we explore this. And my answer is always, music is just organized sound. So what we do, we go around the classroom, sometimes we go outside, and we record different sound effects. Then we go back into the classroom, we try to listen to all the sounds, and I ask them, does this sound like music? Most of them usually say no. So then the next step is that we start to organize those sound effects in different ways. We layer them on top of each other, we organize them maybe by loudness and stuff, or we organize them by rhythm. And usually around that time is when my students, they start to say, oh, this is starting to sound like music, or this sounds completely like music to me.
So what do you think the kids get out of this? What do they get out of learning about this? I'm not going to call it music anymore. I'm going to call it organized sound.
Oh, I think that they get quite a lot out of it. I think just by organizing the daily sounds that you hear around you, you become a better listener, you become a better communicator. Just paying attention to some of the everyday occurrences. For example, one of the schools that I teach at, there's a plane that goes over the school quite often. And we recorded that. And some students actually made a whole, let's say, narrative soundscape using the sound of it. And they're, oh, well, this is actually the spaceship that comes down down and takes people, and we have to get the people back from the spaceship. So it's really fun exercises that they can do with sound and creating narrative soundscapes and narrative music, creating a story using that sound.
In terms of the quote-unquote traditional instruments, I'm talking about the piano, I'm talking about the flute, the clarinet, etc. Mm. What about the benefits of just learning those traditional instruments?
Absolutely. So I think that now there's been quite a lot of research and talk about the benefits to hand-eye coordination with learning traditional instruments. When I teach my students, maybe outside of swimming lessons, it's kind of one of the, I teach many wind instruments. So it's kind of one of the first times that students have to pay attention to their breathing in a very purposeful way. So one of the instruments I teach is the saxophone. And the saxophone is very different from the piano. With the piano, I mean, you can press on the key and you get a very pleasing sound immediately. But with the saxophone, it takes a bit more work. You have to adjust your embouchure, how your mouth is forming on the mouthpiece. You have to be very mindful of the air that you're putting out. And I think that's kind of the takeaway for many traditional instruments, that mindfulness to keep working towards something, using your body as kind of the bridge to create something beautiful and meaningful to you.
I think that we can all agree that when we hear a piece of music that we love, it does something to us. I'm talking goose pimples. I'm talking we feel something. It can actually generate an emotion within us. So how do you describe that as someone that works with it all the time? And why is that important when teaching children?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very biased with this question because, I mean, it's one of the main reasons why I chose music as a career. I can't get enough of that feeling. It's to me one of the best feelings in the world. I listen to a lot of instrumental music, a lot of lyrical music, and always those goosebumps. I think that it all has to do with what connections you make with the music, and for children especially, for many of the same reasons that we want children to read a good book, it really helps spark the imagination and gives them a non-visual meaning to things. It helps them develop nostalgia and meaning to what they hear around them and what they enjoy.
Given its importance, though, with helping our own emotions, do you think that music can heal as well?
Absolutely, yes. First and foremost, I think that it helps express what we might not be able to put into words. I think that for many different facets of art, but with music and playing music or composing it or improvising, finding those ways to communicate what we're feeling without having to write it down, without having to explain it, is quite powerful. There's been a lot of research in terms of things like music therapy and how powerful it can be. For example, the music therapist will use music from maybe a younger time when things were a bit nicer to kind of really hone in on that nostalgia feeling and help. And I think that can be very powerful for children as well.
So I learned the recorder as a kid. I'm just going to say that I think that is enough to put anyone off of music forever. Do you teach the recorder, Marquis?
I do teach it.
Oh, man. Do people still need to learn that? Why is a great question, but what instruments do you feel that kids do actually connect best with?
Right. Yep, I do teach the recorder. I'll be totally honest. It's not my absolute top choice of instrument, even as a teacher of it. I think that it has a lot of things to teach us as an instrument, though. I think that maybe like a more important thing to keep in mind for a young student is not necessarily the instrument, but the type of music that they want to learn. If you're not learning music that excites you or that you want to learn, then it can make the whole process not as good. So I don't know how many times you've listened to Mary Had a Little Lamb on a recorder.
Less than I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say after the 100th time, it starts to show a little wear. Yeah.
would your advice be, if there's a parent listening right now that wants to get their kid into music somehow, for all of the vast benefits that we have just talked about, whether it's the very physical benefits, learning your body, hand-eye coordination, or the very emotional benefits to do with playing music, I mean, how would you then encourage this kid to find music a little bit?
Right. I think that we all kind of start as percussionists. As babies, we're always trying to hit something. We're throwing stuff on the ground, maybe as toddlers. What we're doing is we're exploring the world by hitting those things, by hearing how those things sound, by exploring the textures of the different sounds around us. So if you have a very, very young child, giving them a few noisemakers, I know that that's a difficult sell to parents, but giving them a few things that they can explore sound with. If your child is a little bit older, expose your child to many different types of music. I mean, from different cultures, different genres, anything. And see what they like, and then see what kind of instruments are commonly used in that type of music. Maybe they would like to start on an instrument from that genre that they're enjoying. And a lot of music right now, in terms of pop, that there are synthesizers. Some would use guitars or other acoustic instruments. But finding out what your child likes and honing in on that, I think, is great. And just the final thing I'll say about that in terms of getting your child started in music is also being comfortable with the journey, being comfortable with knowing that when your child is practicing, they may not be practicing the stuff that sounds the absolute best, that they're trying to get there. And so all those squeaks, all those odd noises and things like that, be comfortable with providing space for them to grow through and from that.
That's so true. And you need to go and tell your neighbors as well. It's the journey. You should enjoy it. It's the journey. They'll be good one day, but they need to do this bit to get to the good bit.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be very excited to hear that, the neighbors.
Absolutely. Marquise, thanks so much for telling us a lot about music. If people want to find out more about you, the different projects that I mentioned that you're involved with right at the beginning, please, can I ask you to give your website?
Yes. It's just MarquiseMcGee.com. My name is spelled MarquiseMcGee.
Amazing. We'll put a link up to that as well on our website once this podcast goes up online. Marquise, thanks so much for joining us and talking to us about music and, organized sound. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
Thanks so much to the International Institute of Lancy for sponsoring the show this morning. I love that they support the arts and feel that creative arts are so important for a balanced and fulfilling education. In secondary, for example, they offer music and visual arts courses, which allow kids to develop artistic literacy and sensitivity. They have hands-on creative projects through fine arts or film and media studies as options. And they also offer the baccalaureate speciality in fine arts. I want to say thanks to them for sponsoring this show, and I love how they recognise the importance of creativity in their programmes. Drama and theatre studies were, in fact, so important to me at school. And if you've loved this show and found it useful, then know that you can find out more about IIL and more Learn More episodes about bilingual education or having tough conversations with kids at worldradio.ch/learnmore.